Blog Talk Radio.
Greetings. Can you hear me?
Yes. This is Clara Small. How are you?
I'm fantastic. Yourself?
Hello?
Hello. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Okay, great. We are on. We are on live. For those in the listening audience, this is your host, Jamal Brown. You have tuned into another exciting show of the Just the Freedom Radio. Today is June the 30th, and today's Black History Fact of the Day is that this day marks the founding of the first and only all-African-American city in the state of California, that being Allensworth, California. Again, it was founded on this day in the year 1908. Again, those in the listening audience, you have tuned in once again, and we are on the line with Miss Dr. Clara Small. She is a professor of history at Salisbury University. I understand that she has a new and exciting book that's out, and she's going to share with us a little bit about that. Dr. Small, again, are you there with us?
Yes, yes. Thank you for your kind introduction. the book that Reverend Burdell and I co-authored is entitled Men of Color to Arms, Manumitted Slaves and Freed Blacks from the Lower Eastern Shore of Maryland Who Served in the Civil War. This book is...
Awesome.
I'm sorry?
I said that's awesome. Before we move any further, I know what a manumitted person is. Perhaps I'm thinking there are some people in our listening audience who don't.
Okay.
Define for us what a manumitted human being is.
A manumitted human being is an individual who has served as a slave or has been oppressed by someone else. But these individuals were freed solely for the purpose of serving in the Civil War. These were slaves. There's no other way to define it. They were slaves. They labored from sun to sun, from the time they could see to the time they could not. They were slaves.
Got it.
Okay, and they were freed solely for the purpose of serving in the Civil War, because the Emancipation Proclamation that was issued by President Abraham Lincoln, and it went into effect January 1st, 1863, did not free the slaves in the state of Maryland, because Maryland was a border state.
Mm-hmm.
So the Emancipation Proclamation did not affect any slaves in Maryland. And the same was true for other border states, such as Delaware and Missouri and other places. So when the Union needed able-bodied, warm-blooded individuals They and Maryland did not receive enough soldiers to fight in the war, and they did not ever reach the quota set for them by the Union forces. They turned to slaves. And
right.
their owners were told that if they did not free them by a certain date, they would be fine. But on the other hand, each of the owners received $300 for each of the slaves that they freed and enlisted them in the Union Army.
Wow.
So you can imagine. I'm sorry?
Let me jump in here right now. This is a good place for me to ask this question. Tell us about how the Confiscation Acts and those other acts and laws and things, Notorious Manumission and all that stuff, how did that contribute to history?
Well,
folks turning in folks and all that old type of stuff.
Oh, well, what happened was that once slaves were, well, some slaves were not free, they freed themselves. They simply walked away. And so they followed the Union Army. And the owners were very, very upset about that. So the government had to step in and do something about it because pressure was being put upon the government by those owners. So the owners wanted their slaves back. Well, the government said, well, okay, these slaves are basically, contraband.
Mm-hmm.
Contraband of war. Meaning that, okay, they were in the middle of a war, so they, as contraband, are part of the Union forces if they want to be. But their owners still wanted their property back because that's what slaves were, nothing but property.
Property,
and so the end result was, okay, the federal government said, okay, we've confiscated them. We've conquered this territory, part of some of the southern states. So slaves are part of that conquest, so Confiscation Act. If you conquer the territory, you have the right to control it. But they still did not satisfy most of the slaveholders. So they tried any way they could to get their property back. And many of them did receive their slaves because the president after Lincoln, who happened to be Johnson, simply gave their property back, not just the slaves, if he could, in those areas that were controlled by the Confederacy, but also property that had been abandoned by the Confederates.
I see. Is the book out yet?
Yes. It April the 10th, 2010.
Awesome.
Was the date of the book signing.
Okay. Let me ask you this question. Didn't Lincoln have to issue two different confiscation acts?
He issued more than, yes.
Tell us a little bit about that.
Well, Lincoln was straddling the fence. He was doing whatever was necessary to try to preserve the Union. Once it fell apart, he had to do whatever was necessary. And that's basically what he was doing. He was trying to keep the loyal individuals within the Union, but at the same time trying to draw the Confederates back into the Union because he considered them to be, I guess you could say, wayward, much like wayward children. And everyone thought that the war would be over very, very rapidly, but that did not happen. So Lincoln basically... all of the acts that were passed were designed to try to end the conflict and bring the Union back together again. Lincoln issued many, many acts. The same was true for members of Congress. But the end result was that the war lasted 4 years, much, much longer than anyone even thought it would last. Even the general public thought it was just, you know, the South flexing his muscles, wanting people to understand that, okay, we have property that is protected by the Constitution of the United States. So why are you basically treading on us? But the end result was that it was a strange war. Most people didn't even think it was that deadly until they were riding out in their Sunday best, and they got between two of the Union and the Confederacy. And people were being killed. Oh, yeah, they were basically riding out, literally riding out, just to see a little skirmish. And that happened in many places. And once it became quite deadly, that's when they began to realize that this was a serious war. And
something serious was going on.
Very, very much so. And the deadliest battle was at Gettysburg and Cheatham. And people began to realize, and at the Battle of the Crater, that people realized that it was very, very serious. And they also realized that cotton diplomacy had to come to an end because England was basically helping the South because of cotton.
Mm-hmm.
So Lincoln had to intervene and come up with some means to end that support from England. So after the Battle of Antietam, that's when he issued the preliminary Emancipation Proclamation, which was in September.
So England's contribution to the South, was that the primary, can we call that the driving force that led to Lincoln signing the Emancipation Proclamation?
That was part of it.
Okay. What other factors factored into him signing it? I know it wasn't just out of the kindness of his heart.
Well, foremost, Lincoln is a compromiser. Okay. And secondly, he must do anything that's necessary. He felt that he had to do anything that was necessary to draw back together. But he wanted to make sure that England and no other nation gave its support to the South. So you have to take the moral justification for the war away from the South. And that's why the Emancipation Proclamation became so important.
Right, right. Could you speak to Frederick Douglass's role in influencing? We know through history now that he, made acquaintances with the president and actually, had some private conversations with him. Could you speak at all again to his role in influencing or, giving a voice to the voiceless, if you will?
Frederick Douglass was one of the major supporters of recruitment of blacks in the Civil War. He was instrumental in getting the 54th Massachusetts organized. Two of his sons even joined the 54th Massachusetts. It was Frederick Douglass and some of his friends, very, very wealthy abolitionists, who were working together to try to encourage the president and others to allow blacks, generally free blacks, but also slaves, manumitted slaves, to join the Union forces. Because there had been numerous attempts by free blacks to join. That did not happen. It was not until after the preliminary emancipation was signed that they were allowed to join.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Got it. Now, how did you get involved with this project, which turned into your book?
Well, I have been working on the history of blacks on the Eastern Shore for a number of years, because once I came to Salisbury University to teach, I realized that no history had been written about blacks on the Eastern Shore. And so I started working on manumission records, gathering information, and so I had been working on a portion of that because my goal was to write a history of African Americans on the Eastern Shore. That was going to be my legacy. That was my great idea. But I received a call from Reverend Burdell.
Before I let you go any further, explain what region geographically is the Eastern Shore for us folks here on the West Coast. who aren't too familiar with Eastern Shore, and also tell us a little bit about its significance.
Oh, my goodness. Eastern Shore of Maryland is a nice little peninsula, a part of a peninsula. We call it Delmarva because it takes into account three states jutting out in the Atlantic, okay? Delaware, Maryland, and Virginia. It is basically separated from the rest of Maryland by Chesapeake Bay, a portion of it. And this area is one of the richest, most untapped areas in the country in terms of history. If you would drop a compass in, I guess you could say, in the heart of Delmarva, and expand it 60 degrees or even 90 degrees, you would hit some of the most, I guess you could say, most notable blacks in this country, in the history of this country. Richard Allen, Absalom Jones, Harriet Tubman, Frederick Douglass, the most famous abolitionist in this country, the first black who invented anything, the first woman who served in a legislature, was born in this, well, at what is now the University of Maryland Eastern Shore. The first black, I guess you could say, most outstanding, first black nationalist was here. Athletes here. Oh, I could go on and on and on. This area is really so rich in history, you wouldn't believe. Even the first black who appeared in American history, Anthony Johnson, he appeared as early as 1622 down in Virginia, moved up to Maryland, and he owned slaves too. That early. Hmm. And some of his descendants are still here. And they lived in Maryland as well as in Delaware. But,
wow.
Oh, my gosh.
Tell me a little more about this Anthony brother and how or why he owned enslaved other African people.
Okay. Anthony Johnson first appeared in the records as early as 1622. He came in a ship to possibly a Spanish ship because his name first appears as Antonio in the records. He was down in Virginia, and he survived an Indian attack. Oh, yeah, Native American attack. And his wife was named Mary. She came in a different ship. And he was fortunate to get a wife because during that time there were few women in what is now the United States, especially in Virginia. And he was brought over on to another plantation from, I guess you call it, the shore of Virginia to eastern shore of Virginia, mainland Virginia to eastern shore of Virginia. And he was working under some individuals, most likely as an indentured servant. But he became free and began to accumulate a property. And he had kinship ties with one of the most, I guess, one of the wealthiest individuals on the Eastern Shore named Edmund Scarborough. Scarborough, some people will call a scoundrel. But in the process, he accumulated more than 650 acres of land. He was respected by whites. He was sued. He testified in court. Excuse me. And he was among one of the earliest free blacks in this country.
Wow. Now let me ask you about those that he enslaved. Did he enslave them? Does the record show he enslaved them in the same manner, in the same fashion as the chattel slavery that we know and are familiar with? Or was he a kinder owner? Wow.
Well, we don't know whether he was kinder or not, but we do know that one of the individuals he enslaved was John Kaser. Kaser and some of the neighbors of Anthony Johnson took Anthony Johnson to court because Kaser said that he was an indentured servant. Well, in court, Anthony Johnson won. even after the death of Anthony Johnson, and the family moved to Maryland, the Eastern Shore of Maryland, John Casey was still with the family. Okay, he was allowed to have cattle marks. He was allowed to own property, but he was still listed as a slave with the family. When the family moved from Maryland to Delaware, Casey was still listed as a slave of the Johnson family.
So he wasn't indenturing these individuals. He had them in bona fide enslavement, huh?
Yes. From all the records, court records that we have, yes. And there was
that
also another servant, too.
That is something. All right, let's get back to the book and your research and you got it out and feedback, all that good stuff. Let's hear more about the book.
Oh, okay. Well, the book was a result of me doing the research on the Eastern Shore of Maryland, and Reverend Bedell was trying to do research on his family, and he knew about an individual named Isaiah Fassett. Well, everybody in the community around Berlin, Maryland, referred to Isaiah Fassett as uncle. At the time that Reverend Bedell began his study of his family, he did not know that Isaiah Fassett was actually the brother of his great-grandfather.
Hmm.
So he started doing some research, and he found that Fassett had served in the Civil War. He knew that part. But he did not know that there were three other brothers who had served along with him. And so in the process of doing research, he said, well, maybe it's only four or five who actually served, blacks from this area. Well, in the process of doing his research, there was an article in the paper about Isaiah Fassett. And a local attorney, Joe Moore, also was fascinated by the article. He said he had found some research that showed that there were some others who may have served, because he found some manumission records of 83 blacks who had served. But they, at the time, he didn't know that they had served in the Civil War either. So they got together for lunch and started talking. And so American Legion post here allowed him to do a presentation. Well, in the process, they agreed to list the individuals. But Reverend Bedell said the project was getting too large for him, because he had not engaged in that type of research for a period of time. So someone told him to contact me. So we got together and agreed to work on it. Well, it wasn't five or six. I said, well, mm-hmm. I have some other information. I have about 300, and I have at least 300 records of 300 that were freed for that purpose. He said, well, how did you know that? I said, because I've been working on this, in the process of working on something else. So I stopped working on that, and we went to that the new project, 600. Well, in the final analysis, it was 1,284 in just two counties. Who had been
1,284?
Yes, soldiers, black soldiers who had served in the Civil War. Free blacks numbered about, I think, 400 total. The rest were slaves. And we have the names of the slaveholders, the ages of each of the soldiers, if they were killed, if they survived, if they died, where they died, their rank, everything else. And we have some short biographies of some of the individuals. So that really states that we have made contributions to this country, even though we're still trying to convince some individuals that we have done some great things.
Right.
I've even
had a
student on a Friday afternoon to tell me that blacks have never done anything in this country, and definitely not on the Eastern Shore. And I was so angry, steam was coming out of everywhere, so I put...
I bet.
And this was a black history class that I was teaching, and a student had the nerve to say that. So, I was serious.
Black, I just need to know, was it a black student, and B, how did this person even get to college?
Thank you. So, you know, I was furious. And so that night, I sat in the middle of my bed with my, at that time, word processor and typed up 32 pages off the top of my head. And I went to campus that Saturday to Xerox a copy for everyone in my class. And this was just off the top of my head. And
right.
So the president at that time came on to the third floor where I was, and he wanted to know what I was doing, so I gave him a copy. He went to Hawaii, and he called back to campus that Tuesday and told public relations that he wanted that information that I had typed up overnight. He wanted it in print for all of the schools in the Tri-County area. And that was just a little
wow.
booklet, which started me on my quest to do a history of African Americans on the Eastern Shore. But that's, you know, I'm still working on that. But you can imagine what this book has done for some people. There are people are starting to work on their family history. They're pulling it together because they've heard of the names before, but they didn't know that they had served in the war. They had no clue about them. They in the past, they were just names.
Mm-hmm.
So it started quite a few people on their quest to find out about themselves.
I hear you loud and clear. Ms. Leslie told me to ask, tell us some information about the Lodge. It was the first VFW.
The first VFW?
Yes.
You mean here on the Eastern Shore or the Veterans of Foreign Wars? I don't know about
yes.
the first, but the one that was here that wanted Reverend Burdell to do a presentation was down in Berlin.
Okay.
Can you hear me, Dr. Smalls?
Yes, how are you?
Doing very, very well, and the interview is going wonderful. I'm really enjoying it. I'm learning a lot. But the question I was trying to get across to Jamal, it has something to do with a diverse organization prior to the VFW. They had the black and white soldiers from the Civil War. They were in this lodge or something. I can't remember. I had a guest maybe a year and a half ago, and he had a picture of them. And that's all I was trying to bring to you.
Unless it was something after the Civil War. I know they had reunions of veterans of the Civil War. And Isaiah Fassett was one of the last blacks to die in, I think, 1946 or 1948. But he would go to those reunions every year. I'm not sure about what the first VFW.
Yeah, it wasn't a VFW. I was just using it as a term to, you know, to express
a reference.
What kind of
a reference? Okay, but there was a group that met together because Isaiah Fassett was one of those individuals who attended every year. Well, every year that they had the reunion.
I'm not sure. Well, I'll look up and I'll email you. But I just want to give the show back over to Jamal, and you guys are doing a great job. We'd like for you to explain who you are again and give us your contact information.
Okay. My name is Clara L. Small. I teach history at Salisbury University. I've been teaching at Salisbury University since 1977, and nearly every semester, I've been teaching African-American history. And I came to Salisbury from Lincoln University in Missouri. I taught there for 4 years. And 2 years prior to that, I taught at St. Paul's College in Lawrenceville, Virginia. So I've been at this, 41 years. And it's been a labor of love. And this is a labor of love. I'm a Southerner. I'm from North Carolina. My B.A., Bachelor's of Arts, from North Carolina Central University in Durham. My first master's is also from North Carolina Central in Durham. My
first
second
master's? How many do you have?
I have two. two. Okay, my second is from St. John's in Santa Fe, New Mexico, the sister school to the one in Annapolis with the great books and Socrates, Plato, Aristotle, that philosophy. And I began my doctorate at the University of Missouri at Columbia when I was working on when I was teaching at Lincoln. And I finished my doctorate in American colonial history with an emphasis on African-American history at the University of Delaware. So I've been around.
How can we get in contact with you? And more importantly, how can we pick up a copy of this book?
Oh, okay. The easiest way to get in contact with me is at Salisbury University. And the number is 410-543-6523. That's directly into my office. And my email address is clsmall. That's S-M-A-L-L. If you put an extra S on it, it will go into cyberspace. At clsmall at Salisbury, salisbury.edu.
Give us the number and the email. Give us the number and email real slow one more time, if you could, please.
Yes. 410-543-6523.
410-543-6523. And the email and where we can find this book.
Yes. Email address is clsmall, S-M-A-L-L, at Salisbury, S-A-L-I-S-B-U-R-Y, .edu, and it's at the Salisbury University Bookstore, because it's easier to catch up with people in the bookstore because they're open many, many hours, much long, more than I am on campus, because I serve on the Governor's Commission on Slavery, and I work with for international honor societies, and I'm chancellor of the region, northeastern region, so I have 75 colleges and universities under me. So I'm on the road a lot.
Sounds like it.
But it's fun. You have to do something that you love. And if you don't, you're going to be miserable. And you really don't want to be postal going to work days.
You have to do something that you love. That is a profound statement. And on that statement, we will unfortunately have to end the show. Our time is up.
Oh,
but,
I'm sorry.
No, not a problem at all. You truly are a wealth of information, and I would certainly like to continue the conversation, so I'll be talking with Ms. Leslie and seeing if we can have you back on the show here sooner rather than later.
Great. Thank you so much, and thank you. Have a
thank
great
you.
Day. Have a nice 4th of
pleasure.
July. Take
you
care.
You do the same. You do the same.
All right.
All right now. All right. I would like to say thank you once again to those in the listening audience. Tune in Sunday at our normal time. We'll have another show live for you, and hopefully we get some callers. All right.
Okay. Bye-bye.